There was an article in a magazine a year or two ago about the present fad for turning biblical narratives into movies. Noah, Exodus, Gods and Kings, and so on. And the article was proposing then a few more films in the same vein that haven't yet been attempted, even suggesting a suitable director in each case. And so alongside the stories of Ruth and Joseph and Gideon and others, one that was proposed was the story of Jonah. And the suggested director then was Peter Jackson of Lord of the Rings fame. And this is what the article said: a man on the run from God, a whale with an appetite for profits, the fate of a city that hangs in the balance. The story of Jonah has all the makings of a Hollywood adventure. How cool would Peter Jackson's fantasy-inspired special effects be? Seeing the massive whale and the exotic city of Nineveh on the big screen would be worth the adaptation. The best part, though, is the story's anti-Hollywood ambiguous ending, in which Jonah and God are left still arguing and audiences still thinking about the message. Now, whether or not that's a good idea then to turn the story of Jonah into a film, certainly this is an epic and iconic biblical tale, isn't it? Not only indeed is it characterized by such high drama, but it also confronts us with all kinds of fascinating and important themes. The foolishness of human beings thinking that they can elude God, whether it's Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden hiding amongst the trees, or whether it's Jonah heading out to sea. The control God has over every part of the natural world, able to send a storm to halt Jonah's escape, and to send then a giant fish in order to keep Jonah alive. And then, I suppose, supremely, the kindness and compassion of God, sparing this city of Nineveh, this hotbed of corruption and vice and immorality, sparing that terrible place. So whichever way you look at it then, whether in terms of its plot line or in terms of its deeper messages, the story of Jonah, I'm saying, deserves attention. But you might be thinking, well, hang on a minute, why are you talking about Jonah? This is Easter Sunday morning. Surely we should be talking about Jesus, not about Jonah. Well, that's a good point. But I have reasons then for starting this morning with Jonah. I don't think I've completely lost the plot. There's method in my madness. And I want to draw your attention then briefly this morning to three things. First of all, a connection. A connection. Because there's a very simple connection then between Jonah and Jesus, which you may have noticed Jesus himself talking about in that second passage we read a moment ago in Matthew chapter 12. And the connection then is this: a period of time, 3 days and three nights. So 3 days and three nights Jonah spent in the belly of the great fish, Jesus says, and 3 days and three nights I will spend, Jesus says, in the heart of the earth. That's the phrase he uses. He's referring, of course, to his burial, to being buried over that Easter weekend. So Jonah and Jesus, then, they aren't unrelated figures. It's not a ridiculous idea to mention them both in the same breath. There's this commonality, this correspondence, this connection. There's this very significant three-day period at the center of both men's stories. And I just want us to pause then over that very simple point to start with this morning. And I just want to make a point then about the Bible. I mentioned a moment ago those other well-known Old Testament narratives that either have been or could potentially be made into films. The stories of Noah and Moses and Ruth and Joseph and Gideon and so on. And you're probably then familiar with at least some of those Old Testament stories this morning. Perhaps you've quite enjoyed them when you heard them as children. Perhaps as you've heard them at points as adults, you've enjoyed those narratives. But perhaps at times you've also wondered, well, what's the point of them? What's the point of this book, the Bible, just kind of amassing all these stories of different people? Yes, they're interesting in and of themselves, but what's the point? Well, you see, what we've just said about Jonah actually applies to all the Old Testament narratives. They all have connections with Jesus. Those connections might not always be as specific and detailed as 3 days and three nights, but all those narratives, all those stories have connections with Jesus. We have in our house a children's Bible. We have lots of children's Bibles, but we have one particular one, and it has all the usual stuff, Adam and Noah and Abraham and Moses and so on. But the title of this Bible is the Jesus Storybook Bible. And the subtitle is Every Story Whispers His Name. And every Bible story, every Bible part does whisper Jesus' name. You see, the Bible isn't an anthology. It's not just this collection of stories. No, the Bible is about Jesus. That's the purpose of the book, to tell us about Jesus, and every part of it conforms to that overall purpose. I want to encourage you then, if you've never realized that, to read the Bible through those spectacles, as it were. To read the narratives of David and Samson and Esther and Daniel, not as gripping, but kind of self-standing, self-contained little yarns. But to read them rather as component parts, all of them, of this one book, which is all about Jesus Christ. Every story whispers his name. So that's the first thing then, a connection. But then secondly this morning, a contrast. A contrast. Some of you may be familiar with the Monty Python sketch for Yorkshiremen. And in this sketch then, there are these four Yorkshiremen reminiscing about their childhoods and how hard their childhoods were, and they're all trying to outdo each other then with stories of misery and deprivation. And so one of them says, well, we used to live in this tiny old tumble-down house, and there were all these great big holes in the roof. At which point another butts in, house? You were lucky to live in a house. We used to live in a room, all 26 of us, no furniture, and half the floor was missing. At which point someone else chips in, oh, you were lucky to live in a room. We had to live in a corridor. At which point someone else says, a corridor? We used to dream of living in a corridor. That would have been a palace to us. We used to live in an old water tank on a rubbish tip. And so it goes on, and the claims get more and more outrageous. And there's a touch of that in this passage in Matthew 12. You see, here's Jonah then, and he spends 3 days and three nights in the belly of a great fish. Now, I know perhaps at times when we're telling the story of Jonah to the children, we can go to town a bit too much on the rotting fish and all the other things that must have been swirling around Jonah as he was languishing there. But of course, the fact is, it would have been a pretty grim situation in which to spend 3 days and three nights. But you see, like the sketch, Jesus can outdo Jonah, because he then is going to spend 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. I mean, the belly of a great fish is luxury, it's a palace, compared to where Jesus is going to spend 3 days and three nights. In death itself, that's what the heart of the earth signifies here. That's a vastly grimmer situation in which to spend 3 days and three nights. And of course, the heart of the earth then, it's not only grimmer than the belly of the great fish, But it's also so much more hopeless and irreversible. I mean, if you get swallowed up by a sea creature, then I guess your prospects don't look particularly good. The odds are certainly stacked up against you. But at least there's a faint possibility that the same mouth which ingested you might also spit you back out again. But if you get swallowed up by death, there's no such possibility. You've had it. There's no going back the way you came. So while, yes, it's remarkable that Jonah only spends 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish and does reemerge from there, it's absolutely extraordinary, it's beyond extraordinary, that Jesus only spends 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth and then reemerges from there. And so that's the contrast to which I'm referring in my second point. Jonah's reemergence is merely from inside a sea creature. Jesus' reemergence is from inside death. The contrast is most eloquently summed up by Jesus himself in Matthew 12 there. In verse 41, something greater than Jonah is here. Jonah who came back from the fish, I will come back from death. And again, I just want us to pause then and think about that for a moment. Jesus re-emerges from death. That's what Easter Sunday is all about. Think about that. Jesus re-emerges from death. I mean, people do Jonahs, don't they? People do come back from situations where the odds are stacked against them. You think of those 33 Chilean miners back in 2010. And there they were, more than 2,000 feet underground for 69 days. And they came back from that situation. More recently, you think of Andy Hill last August, the pilot of that vintage aircraft at the Shoreham Air Show. And it came down onto a busy road and 11 people were killed and many more injured. And yet he came back from that situation and is alive and well today. People do come back, like Jonah, from situations where the odds are stacked against them. But Jesus' reemergence, a reemergence from death, that's in a different category altogether, isn't it? I mean, death is the ultimate one-way ticket. It's the ultimate finality. Many of you have come up against that in the most painful circumstances, in burying a loved one. And it's utterly unlike saying goodbye to someone who's going off to university or even to someone who's emigrating to the other side of the world. The loved one's gone. Full stop. End of story. They're not going to come back. And yet Jesus comes back. And you can say, well, it didn't really happen. It's a nice idea and it's nice to keep Easter every year, but it didn't really happen. He didn't really come back from death. But remember, it's Jesus himself who is talking here in Matthew chapter 12. It's Jesus himself who is saying, I'm only going to be in the heart of the earth for 3 days and three nights, and then I'm going to reemerge. Now, if in fact, after saying that, Jesus just stayed dead like everybody else does, there's only one conclusion, you know. Jesus was nuts. He claimed he was only going to be dead for 3 days. He's off his head. He's a raving lunatic, if that's the case. And yet, this is the man who just a few chapters earlier in Matthew's Gospel has preached the Sermon on the Mount with its breathtaking moral beauty. I can't believe that the one who said, do to others as you would have them do to you, and who taught us to love our enemies and go the second mile and turn the other cheek, and who told the parable of the Good Samaritan. I can't believe that he was actually a nutcase who falsely thought that he was going to rise from the dead after 3 days. I find that incredible. As incredible indeed as the idea that the eyewitnesses of his resurrection laid down their lives, because of course many of them did lay down their lives for something they knew was made up. No, this happened. This happened. On a real day, in real history, Jesus Christ re-emerged from death. And I'm saying then, just let the sheer awesomeness of that sink into your minds this morning. This is what Easter's about. A man dying and being dead for only 3 days and 3 nights, and then coming back. So a connection, a contrast. But then thirdly this morning, a comparison. A comparison. So we must make then this important contrast between Jesus' re-emergence and Jonah's re-emergence. Jesus' re-emergence was vastly more impressive. As we've said, he came back from death, Jonah merely from the belly of a great fish. We must make that important contrast. But we can also make an important comparison this morning. The story is told of a young teacher who was struggling somewhat to maintain discipline and control in her classroom. She had a class of rather rowdy children, and so there she was on one occasion, and she was writing on the blackboard. This was in the days when blackboards still were used, and all these children behind her were just laughing and chatting and messing around, and eventually she could take no more of this, so she turned around and she picked out the boy who seemed to be the ringleader of all the mayhem, and she threw her piece of chalk as hard as she could. Unfortunately, however, hand-to-eye coordination was not really her thing, and she missed the boy by 2 or 3 meters, and the chalk then went smashing into the window at the side of the classroom, where, however, by some freak accident, it hit a blue bottle that was sitting there, killing the blue bottle and spattering its blood across the window pane. At which point, in a stroke of genius, the teacher just stared at the boy and said to him menacingly, "Next time, son, that'll be you." Now, you know the story of Jonah then, and how in the end he went to Nineveh and he announced to the city of Nineveh that God was going to judge them. God was going to overthrow, he was going to destroy the city. And in response to that message, something remarkable happened, and these people in that city, they became very humble and they became very contrite. And how then, how did that happen? How on earth did those people of Nineveh, in that city that, as I said before, was a byword for vice and immorality, how did they respond as they did to Jonah's message? Well, notice in our passage in Matthew 12, Jesus talks about the sign of Jonah. He uses that phrase in verse 39, the sign of Jonah. And it seems then that these people of Nineveh, they somehow knew that Jonah had re-emerged from the belly of the fish. How they knew that, we don't know. But it seems that those people of Nineveh, they knew what had happened to Jonah. They knew that he'd been swallowed by this great sea creature, and that he'd been amazingly delivered from that and had re-emerged from that situation. And it seems then that just like that naughty boy in the classroom, just as he took the dead blue bottle on the window as a sign that teacher should be taken seriously, and he changed his ways, It seems as though the people of Nineveh, they took this re-emergence of Jonah as a sign that Jonah must be taken seriously. They couldn't just disregard what this man was saying, this man who had come to them from the belly of a fish. They must take him seriously. They took this as a sign, and they listened to what Jonah said, and they changed their ways. And you see, Jesus then, in this regard, draws a comparison between Jonah and himself. You see, Jesus, in this passage, has just been talking about God's judgment. You notice we read from verse 33, didn't we? And in verse 36, Jesus talks about this day of judgment. There's a day of judgment coming, when he says everyone will give account, even for the words they have spoken. It's a very solemn thing that Jesus is talking about. And these people then, who are listening to him, they kind of say to him, well, you're making these great claims about a day of judgment. Give us some sign that we should take you seriously. We want a sign from you. That's what they ask in verse 38. And Jesus then, his response actually, I think, is full of irony. It's the kind of irony we might use ourselves. So you're a man, and you've one day asked a lady to marry you. And she said yes. And then later on, you're talking to a friend, and he says, have you done much today? And you say, no, I haven't done much today. Well, except get engaged, that is. It's the kind of irony that we might use in our conversation. Jesus is using it here. He says, no sign is going to be given you. I'm not going to give you some sign that I should be taken seriously. Oh, apart from being dead for 3 days and then coming back from the grave. Apart from that sign. And so Jesus is saying then that my resurrection is the sign that you should take me seriously. Just as the people of Nineveh understood Jonah's re-emergence from the fish as the sign Jonah must be taken seriously, my resurrection is the sign that you should take me seriously, and that there is a day of judgment coming, as I'm saying that there is. And I just want to close this morning then applying that to ourselves. You see, Jesus did talk a lot about the day of judgment. That might surprise you. You might think Jesus just talked about love and neighbourliness and what we've already said, the parable of the Good Samaritan, that kind of thing, all the time. But Jesus also spoke often about a day of judgment. A day, in fact, when he himself would sit on a throne and would divide up the entire human race and would allocate to everyone their eternal destiny. Jesus spoke a lot about that. And you might say, well, that's just his opinion. I don't think that's what's going to happen. My opinion's as good as his. But you see, the man who said that, he then died. And 3 days later, he came back from death. That's a powerful sign that Jesus Christ should be taken seriously. It's a powerful sign that just like the people of Nineveh, we should change our ways. Have you done that? You say, well, I don't need to change my ways. Well, have you never lied? Have you never broken a promise? Have you never envied? Have you never coveted something that wasn't yours? Indeed, the biggest thing that all of us have done is that we fail to believe in God's Son, Jesus. That's his main command. That's his greatest command to all of us. Trust in my Son, Jesus. And so many of us, we're trusting in ourselves and in our own efforts and our own goodness and our own decency. And I'm saying then, on Easter Sunday, we're dealing with a sign that is far more extraordinary than a blue bottle being killed or a man coming back from the belly of a fish. a sign of a man coming back from death, a sign that there's going to be a day of judgment, as Jesus said there will be. And so you need to respond. Respond like the people of Nineveh. Respond by turning around from your lifestyle where God isn't central and you're not trusting in his son Jesus. Turn around and acknowledge God and rely on his son. Will you take this sign seriously this morning? If, as Rhys said earlier, if Jesus had just said these things and stayed dead, no reason to take them seriously. But if he says these things, goes into death, comes back out again, there's every reason to take these things seriously. Amen.